He had sent a formal courier to the sisters in isolation compound on the eastern continent, notifying his mother that he and Romber would journey to Kaitain. He didn't delineate their plan or comment on the obvious risk involved, but he wanted her to be prepared for the worst. With no other heirs, Lady Helena would become the ruler of House Atreides should things go wrong, should Leto find himself executed or accidentally killed. Though he knew she had instigated the murder of his father, he had no choice in this circumstance. It was a matter of form. The final pieces of Atreides' luggage and trunks were loaded aboard, and within seconds the big frigate leaped into the gray-locked skies of Caladan. This would be different from his previous trips. The future of Romber's bloodline hung in the balance, and perhaps his own as well. With all the ceremonial fanfare, Leto was fortunate to have been granted an imperial audience 4 days after the coronation. At that time, he and Romber would make a formal petition to Shaddam, stating their case and throwing themselves on his mercy. In the glorious first days of his regime, would the new Padishah Emperor risk casting a dark pall upon the festivities by renewing a sentence of death? Many houses still saw omens in every action, and Shaddam was rumored to be as superstitious as any of them. This omen would be clear enough. By his own decision, Shaddam would establish the tenor of his reign. Would the emperor want to begin by denying justice? Leto hoped not. The ducal frigate took its assigned position inside the highliner's cavernous but crowded cargo bay. Nearby, shuttles full of passengers moved delicately into position, along with transports and cargo ships filled with the trading goods of Caladan. Pundi rice, medicinals from processed kelp, handmade tapestries, and preserved fish products. Privately owned lighters were still loading merchandise into the hold, ferrying up from the surface to the highliner. This huge guild ship had gone from world to world on its roundabout route to Kaitain, and the province-sized cargo bay was dotted with ships from other worlds in the Imperium, all on their way to the coronation. While they waited, Thufir Hawat looked at the chronometer mounted on a bulkhead of the frigate. "We still have 3 hours before the highliner completes loading and unloading and is ready to depart. I suggest we use this time for training, my lord." "You always suggest that, Thufir," Romber said. "Because you are young and require considerable instruction," the Mentat countered. Leto's plush frigate was so full of amenities that he and his entourage could forget they were even off-planet. But he'd had enough of relaxing, and the anxiety of impending events filled him with a nervous energy that he wanted to discharge.
"You have a suggestion, Thufir? What can we do out here?"
The Master of Assassins' eyes lit up. "In space, there are many things a duke and a prince," he said with a nod to Romber, "can learn." A wingless combat pod the size of an ornithopter dropped out of the hold of the Atreides frigate and descended away from the highliner into space. Leto worked the controls with Romber sitting in the co-pilot seat to his right. It reminded Leto for a moment of their brief training attempt in the Ixion ore ship, a near disaster. Hawat stood behind them wearing a mobile crash restraint. In his harness he looked like a pillar of wisdom, frowning down at the two young men as they felt their way through the combat pod's controls for the first time. An emergency override panel floated in front of Hawat. "This craft is different from a coracle at sea, young sirs," Hawat said. "Unlike the larger ships, we're in zero gravity here, with all the flexibility and constraints that implies. You have both done the simulations, but now you are about to discover what real space combat is all about." "I get to fire the weapons first," Romber said, repeating their prior arrangement. "And I'm piloting," Leto added, "but we switch in half an hour." Behind him, Hawat spoke in a monotone. It's not likely, my Lord Duke, that you will find yourself in a situation that requires space combat, but... Yes, yes, I should always be prepared, Leto said. If I've learned anything from you, Thufir, it's that. First, you must learn maneuvering. Awad guided Leto through a series of cruising curves and sharp arcs. He stayed sufficiently far from the enormous highliner, but close enough that he felt it constituted a genuine obstacle at this speed. Once, Leto reacted too quickly and plunged the combat pod into an uncontrolled spin, which he pulled out of by firing reaction jets to stop them without sending the craft spiraling in the opposite direction. Reaction and counter-reaction, Hawat said with approval. His now-tilted mobile crash restraint righted itself. When you and Romber had your boating accident on Caladan, you were able to run aground on a reef to stop things from getting worse. Here, though, there is no safety net to catch you. If you spin out of control, you will continue to do so until the proper countermeasures are taken. You could fall and burn up in the atmosphere, or in deeper space you might hurtle into the void. Let's not do any of that today, Romber said. He looked over at his friend. I'd like to try some practice shots now, Leto, if you can keep this thing flying straight for a few minutes. No problem, Leto said. Bending to the weaponeer station between the boys, Hawat said, I loaded skeet drones into the hold. Romber, try to fire and nullify as many of them as you can. You have free range to use whatever weaponry you wish. Laser beams, conventional explosives, or multi-phase projectiles. But first, my lord, Hawat squeezed Leto's shoulder, please take us around to the other side of the planet where we won't have to worry about hitting the highliner when Romber's shots go wild. With a chuckle, Leto did as he was instructed, cruising high above the clouds of Caladan to the night side, where the planet lay black below them except for necklaces of city lights strung along the distant coasts. Behind them, the glare of Caladan's sun formed a halo against the dark eclipse of the planet. Hawat launched a dozen spinning, glittering globes that flew off on random paths. Romber grabbed the weapons control, a stylo bar with multicolored panels, and blasted shots in all directions, most of which missed entirely, although he did remove one drone with a spray of multi-phase projectiles. They all knew the bullseye was a mere accident, and Romber took no pride in it. Patience and control, Prince, Hawat said. You must use each shot as if it were your last. Make it count. Once you've learned to hit things, then you can be more liberal with your expenditures. Leto chased after the drones as Romber fired with the full array of weapons available to him. When Romber had finally succeeded in eliminating all the targets, he and Leto switched positions and went through more practice maneuvers. 2 hours passed swiftly, and finally the Mentat instructed them to return to the Guild Highliner so they could make themselves comfortable before the navigator folded space and guided the ship to Kaitain. Settled in, lounging on his plush, hawk-crested chair, Leto stared out the window into the crowded cluster of ships inside the Highliner Bay. He sipped a mug of mulled wine that reminded him of Kylea and the stormy night when they had rummaged through the old Duke's possessions. He longed for peaceful interludes and warm companionship, though he knew it would be a long time before his life became settled again. The ships are so close together in here, he said. It makes me uneasy. He watched two Tleilaxu transports take positions near the Atreides frigate. Beyond the transports, a Harkonnen frigate hung in its guild-assigned place. Nothing to worry about, my duke, Hawat said. By the rules of warfare dictated by the Great Convention, no one can fire a weapon inside a highliner. Any house breaking that rule faces permanent forfeiture of its access to guild ships. No one would risk that. Are our shields up anyway? Leto asked. Vermilion hells, no shields, Leto, Romber said, with alarm in his voice. He laughed. You should have learned more about highliners on Ix. Or were you looking at my sister the whole time? Leto flushed crimson, but Romber explained quickly. Aboard a highliner, shields interfere with the ship's Holtzmann propulsion system, preventing it from folding space. An active shield disrupts the navigator's ability to hold his navigation trance. We'd be dead in space. It is also forbidden under our guild transport contract, Hawat said, as if the legal reason might somehow carry more weight. So we're all here, unprotected, naked, and trusting, Leto grumbled, still seeing the Harkonnen ship through the plaz ports. Romber said with a defeated smile, You're making me remember how many people wish me dead. All ships inside this highliner are equally vulnerable, Prince, Hawat said. But you should not concern yourself just yet. Your greatest peril lies ahead on Kaitain. For now, even I intend to rest a bit. Here on board our frigate, we are as safe as we can be. Leto looked out and up at the distant roof of the highliner hold. High above, in a minuscule navigation chamber, a single navigator in a tank of orange spice gas controlled the enormous bulk of the ship. Despite Hawat's assurances, he remained uneasy. Beside him, Romber fidgeted as well, but struggled to cover his anxiety. With an agitated breath, the young Duke sat back, trying to let his tension drain away and prepare for the political crisis he was about to initiate on Kaitain. Storms beget storms. Rage begets rage. Revenge begets revenge. Wars beget wars. Bene Gesserit Conundrum. The Guild Highliner's external hull hatches were sealed, the cavernous openings closed, and the vessel made ready to depart. Soon the navigator would go into his trance, and the ship would be underway. The next and final destination on this route would be Kaitain, where representatives of the great and minor houses of the Landsraad had begun arriving for the coronation of Padishah Emperor Shaddam IV. The navigator maneuvered the enormous vessel away from the gravity well of Caladan and out into open space, preparing to engage the huge Holtzmann engines that would carry it in wild leaps across fold space. The passengers aboard family frigates within the liner's holding bay discerned no movement whatsoever, no motion from the engines, no change in position, no sound. The packed ships hung in their isolated spaces like data bricks in a secure library complex. All houses followed the same rules, putting their faith in the ability of a single mutated creature to find a safe course. Like giddy cattle in a slaughter pen, thought Rabban, as he climbed into his invisible attack ship. He could have wiped out a dozen frigates before anyone figured out what was going on. Given free rein, Rabban would have enjoyed causing such mayhem, the exhilarating sensation of extravagant violence. But that was not in the plan, at least not for now. His uncle had developed a scheme of beautiful finesse. Pay attention and learn from this, he'd said. Good advice, Rabban admitted to himself. He had been discovering the benefits of subtlety and the enjoyment of a revenge long savored. This didn't mean Rabban would forsake the more blunt forms of violence at which he excelled. On the contrary, he would simply add the Baron's methods to his homicidal repertoire. He'd be a well-rounded person by the time he took over the leadership of House Harkonnen. In an unobtrusive movement, the hatches of the Harkonnen family frigate slid open, and the containment field faded just long enough to let Rabban's sleek warship descend into the sealed vacuum within the highliner hold. Slowly, quietly, patiently. Before anyone could see his fighter craft, he engaged the no-field, working the controls the way Peter de Vries had shown him. He felt no different, saw no change in the view transmitted from his monitors. But now he was a killer ghost. Invisible. Invincible. From anyone else's viewpoint, and from external sensors, all electromagnetic signals impinging on the no-field would reflect off and bend around, transforming his ship into an empty spot. The attack craft's engines, more silent than the softest whisper, made no detectable sound or vibration. No one would suspect a thing. No one could even imagine an invisible ship. Rabban activated the no-ship's attitude jets, silently coaxing the deadly craft away from the innocent-looking Harkonnen frigate, toward the Atreides vessel. This attack ship was too big for his liking, not very maneuverable and rather bulky for a quick fighter. But its invisibility and stone silence made all the difference. His thick fingers danced over the control panels, and he felt a measure of glee, of power, glory, and satisfaction yet to come. Soon a ship full of nasty, brutish Tleilaxu would be destroyed. Hundreds of them would die. Always before, Rabban had used his position in House Harkonnen to get what he wanted without question, to manipulate other people and kill those few who were unfortunate enough to stand in his way. But that had been mere play for his personal amusement. Now he was performing a vital function, an act upon which the future of House Harkonnen depended. The Baron had picked him for this mission, and he vowed to do it well. He certainly didn't want to be sent back home to his father. Rabban maneuvered the ship into place slowly, gently. No hurry now. He had the entire trans-space voyage in which to start a war. With the no-field around his attack craft, he felt like a hunter concealed in a blind. This was a different kind of hunting, though, requiring more sophistication than blowing up sandworms on Arrakis. More finesse than chasing children in the Harkonnen Forest Preserve. Here, his trophy would be a change in imperial politics. In the end, he would hang the trophies of greater power and fortunes for House Harkonnen on his wall, stuffed and mounted. The invisible attack craft approached the Atreides frigate, almost close enough to touch. Noiselessly, Rabban powered up his weapon systems, making sure his full array of multi-phase projectiles was ready to launch. He would rely on manual targeting in a case like this. At point-blank range, he couldn't possibly miss. Rabban turned his no-ship, pointing the gun ports toward two nearby vessels, Tleilaxu transports that had, through a substantial Harkonnen bribe paid to the guild, been ordered to park adjacent to the Atreides frigate. Bound from Tleilax 7, the ships undoubtedly carried genetic products, the specialty of the Bene Tleilax. Each ship would be commanded by Tleilaxu masters, with a crew of face dancers, their shape-shifting servants. The cargo might be slig meat, animal grafts, or a few of those abominable golas, clones grown from the flesh of dead humans, copies nurtured in axolotl tanks, so that bereaved families could once again see fallen loved ones. Such products carried high price tags and made the gnome-like Tleilaxu extremely wealthy, despite the fact that they undoubtedly would never be granted Great House status. This was perfect. With all the Landsrad listening, young Duke Leto Atreides had declared his vendetta against the Tleilaxu, swearing vengeance for what they had done to House Vernius. Leto had not been circumspect with regard to the statements he'd made on the record. Everyone knew how much he must hate the occupants of these Tleilaxu ships. As a bonus, the renegade Romber Vernius was at this very moment aboard the Atreides frigate, yet another person to be caught in the Harkonnen web, yet another victim in what would soon be a bloody Atreides-Tleilaxu war. The Landsrad would accuse Duke Leto of being a hothead, brash, impetuous, and violent, pushed to ill-advised acts by his misplaced Ixian friendships and his inconsolable grief over the death of his father. poor, poor Leto, so inadequately trained to cope with the pressures bearing down on him. Rabban knew full well what conclusions the Landsrad and the Imperium would draw, because his uncle and the Twisted Mentat had explained it to him in detail. Hovering immediately in front of the Atreides frigate, invisible and cloaked in anonymity, Rabban targeted the nearby Tleilaxu ships. With a smile on his generous lips, he reached for the controls and opened fire. T.O. Holtzman was one of the most productive Ixion inventors on record. He often went on creative binges, locking himself up for months on end so that he could work without interruption. Sometimes, upon emerging, he required hospitalization, and there were constant concerns over his sanity and well-being. Holtzman died young, barely past 30 standard years, but the results of his efforts changed the galaxy forever. Biographical Capsules, an Imperial Film Book. When Rabban departed from the Harkonnen frigate, full of his important duty, the Baron sat in a high observation chair, looking out into the enormous highliner hold. The navigator had already initiated the engines, sent the gigantic craft through fold space. The smaller ships sat arrayed like so much cordwood, unaware of the fire that was rushing toward them. Even knowing where to look, he couldn't see the invisible ship, of course. But the Baron glanced at his chronometer, knew the time was approaching. He stared out at the unsuspecting Atreides frigate, silent and arrogant in its assigned berth, and kept his eyes on the nearby Tleilaxu craft. Tapping his fingertips on the arm of the chair, he watched and waited. Long minutes passed. Planning the attack, Baron Harkonnen had wanted Rabban to use a laser gun on the doomed Tleilaxu ships. But Chobin, the Rachesian designer of the experimental craft, had left a murky warning scrawled in his notes. The new Nofield had some relationship with the original Holtzman effect that formed the foundation for shields. Every child knew that when a laser gun beam struck a shield, the resulting explosion resembled an atomic detonation. The Baron didn't dare take that risk, and since the Rachesian inventor had already been disposed of, they couldn't ask further questions. Perhaps he should have thought of that ahead of time. No matter. Laser guns weren't needed to damage the Tleilaxu vessels anyway, since ships transported in a highliner hold were prohibited from activating their shields. Instead, multi-phase projectiles, the high-powered artillery shells recommended by the Great Convention to restrict collateral damage, would do the job. Such shells penetrated the fuselage of a target craft and destroyed the interior of the vessel in a controlled detonation, after which the phased secondary and tertiary explosions snuffed onboard fires and saved the remains of the fuselage. His nephew hadn't understood the technical details of the attack. Rabban only knew how to aim and fire the weapons. That was all he needed to know. Finally, the Baron saw a tiny burst of yellow and white fire, and two deadly multiphase projectiles streaked out, as if fired from the front of the Atreides frigate. The projectiles shot like gobbets of viscous flame, then impacted. The doomed Tleilaxu transport vessels shuddered and glowed bright red inside. Oh, how the Baron hoped other ships had been watching this. A direct hit on one ship left it a hollow, incinerated hull in only a few seconds. By design, the other projectile hit the tail section of the second Tleilaxu ship, disabling it without killing everyone aboard. This would give the victims an excellent opportunity to fire back at the Atreides aggressors. Then things would escalate nicely. Good. The Baron smiled, as if he could speak directly to the frantic Tleilaxu crew. Now you know what to do. Follow your instincts. After launching the projectiles, Rabban's no-ship darted away, passing between parked frigates that loomed high overhead. On an emergency frequency, he heard the damaged Tlaloc-Su ship transmit urgent distress messages. Peaceful Beni Tlaloc's transports attacked by Atreides' frigate. Violation of Guild law. Assistance urgently requested. At that moment, the Guild Highliner was nowhere, in transit between dimensions. They could expect neither retaliation nor enforcement until they emerged from Fold Space and arrived at Kytane. By then, it would be far too late. Rabban hoped this would be more like a tavern brawl. He and his friends often marched into drinking establishments in outlying Gedi Prime villages and stirred up trouble, cracked open a few heads, and had a fine old time. A control panel screen in the no-ship showed him a graphic of the immense cargo hold, with a gray dot representing each ship. The dots changed to orange as the ships of various houses major powered up their weapons, prepared to defend themselves in what would become an all-out brush war. Feeling like an unseen mouse on the floor of a crowded dance hall, Rabban piloted the no-ship behind a Harkonnen freighter, around to where no one in any other craft could see the Harkonnen ship open a hatch and allow the guerrilla craft inside. Within the safety of the mothership, Rabban switched off the no-field, making the attack craft visible to the Harkonnen crew. His hatch opened, and he stepped forth onto the platform, wiping sweat from his forehead. His eyes sparkled with excitement. "Have the other ships started shooting yet?" Klaxons sounded. Panicky conversation spat out of the comm system like shrapnel from a Mala pistol. Frantic voices in Imperial Gallic and battle code sounds spilled over from the crowded comm links inside the Highliner. "The Atreides have declared war on the Tlaloc-Su. Weapons fired!" Smug about his successful attack, Rabban shouted to the crew, "Activate our frigate's weapons array. Make sure no one fires on us. Those Atreides are ruthless, you know." He chuckled. Cargo handling equipment gripped the small craft, then lowered it into a space between false bulkheads. Panels snicked shut over the opening, which even Guild scanners could not detect. Of course, no one would search for the craft anyway, since there was no such thing as an invisible ship. "Defend yourselves," another pilot shouted over the comm system. A Tlaloc-Su whine ensued. "We give notice that we intend to fire back. We are well within our rights. No provocation. Blatant disregard for Guild rules." Another voice, coarse and deep. "But the Atreides frigate shows no weapons. Maybe they were not the aggressors." "A trick," the Tlaloc-Su screeched. "One of our ships is destroyed, another severely damaged. Can you not see with your own eyes? House Atreides must pay." Perfect, Rabban thought, admiring his uncle's plan. From this crux point, several events could occur, and the plan would still work. Duke Leto was known to be impetuous, and everyone now believed he had committed a heinous and cowardly act. With any luck, his ship would be destroyed in a retaliatory attack, and the Atreides' name would go down in infamy for Leto's treacherous deed. Or this could just be the beginning of a long and bloody feud between House Atreides and the Tlaloc-Su. In either case, Leto would never be able to untangle himself. On the command bridge of the Atreides' frigate, Duke Leto struggled to calm himself. Because he knew his ship had not fired, it took him some seconds even to understand the accusations being shouted at him. "The shots came from very nearby, my Duke," Awat said, "from right under our bow." "So that was no accident," Leto said, as a dismal feeling came over him. The destroyed Tlaloc-Su ship still glowed orange, while the pilot of the other vessel continued to scream at him. "Vermilion hell, somebody actually fired on the Bene Tlalocs," Romber said, peering out the armor plaz porthole. "And it's about time, if you ask me." Leto heard the cacophony of radio traffic, including the outraged Tlaloc-Su distress calls. At first he wondered if he should offer assistance to the damaged ships. Then the Tlaloc-Su pilot started howling the Atreides' name and demanding his blood. He noted the burned-out hull of the destroyed Tlaloxu craft, and saw the guns on its wounded companion swiveling toward him. "Thufir, what's he doing?" The open comlink blared a furious debate between the Tlaloxu and those who refused to believe in Atreides' culpability. Increasingly, voices supported the Tlaloxu position. Some claimed to have seen what happened, claimed to have witnessed the Atreides ship firing upon the Tlaloxu. A dangerous momentum was building.
"Vermilion hells, they think you did it, Leto," Romber said.
Awat had already dashed to the defensive panel. "The Tlaloxu have powered up weapons for a counterstrike against you, my duke." Leto ran for the comm system and threw open a channel. In only a few seconds, his thoughts accelerated and compressed in a manner that astonished him, for he was not a mentat capable of advanced reasoning powers. It was like dream compression, he realized, or the incredible array of visions that reportedly flashed across a person's mind when faced with imminent death. That's a grim thought. He had to see a way out of this. "Attention!" he shouted into the voice pickup. "This is Duke Leto Atreides. We did not fire upon the Tlaloxu ships. I deny all accusations." He knew they would not believe him, would not cool down soon enough to avoid an eruption of open hostilities that could result in a full-scale war. And in a flash he knew what else he had to do. Faces from his past scrolled across his mind, and he locked onto a memory of his paternal grandfather, Keen Atreides, gazing at him with expectation, his face a crease map of his life experiences. Gentle gray eyes like his own held a disarming strength that his enemies often overlooked, to their great peril. "If only I can be as strong as my ancestors." "Do not fire," he said, addressing the Tlaloxu pilot and hoping all the other captains would listen. Another image took shape in his mind. His father, the old duke, with green eyes and the same expression, but on a face that was Leto's age now, in his teens. In a microflash, more images appeared. His Richesian uncles, aunts, and cousins, the loyal servants, domestic, governmental, and military. All of them carried the same blank expression, as if they were one multiplexed organism, studying him from different perspectives, waiting to make a judgment about him. He saw no love, approval, or disrespect in their faces, just a nothingness, as if he had truly committed a heinous act and no longer existed. The sneering face of his mother appeared, faded. "Don't trust anyone," he thought. A feeling of despondency settled over Leto, followed by extreme, bitter loneliness. Deep inside himself, in a lifeless and bleak place, Leto saw his own emotionless gray eyes, staring back at himself. It was cold here, and he shivered. Leadership is a lonely task. Would the Atreides lineage stop here with him at this nexus moment? Or would he father children whose voices would be added to those of all the Atreides since the days of the ancient Greeks? He listened for his children in the cacophony, but did not sense their presence. The accusing eyes did not waver. Leto spoke the words to himself. "Government is a protective partnership. The people are in your care, to thrive or die based upon your decisions." The images and sounds faded, and his mind became a quiet, dark place. Barely a second had passed in his tension-spawned mental journey, and Leto knew exactly what he had to do, regardless of the consequences. "Activate shields," he shouted. Peering at an observation screen in the belly of the seemingly innocent Harkonnen frigate, Rabban was surprised by what he saw. He raced up from one deck to the next, until finally he stood red-faced and puffing in front of his uncle. Before the indignant but timid Tlaloxu pilot could open fire, a shield began to shimmer around the Atreides ship. But shields were forbidden by guild transport contract, because they shattered a navigator's trance and disrupted the fold-space field.
The Highliner's enormous Holtzman generators would not function properly with the interference. Rabban and the Baron both cursed. The Highliner shuddered around them as it plunged out of fold space. In the navigation chamber high atop the cargo enclosure, the veteran navigator felt his trance crumble. His brain waves diverged and circled back into themselves, spinning and twisting out of control. The Holtzman engines groaned, and fold space rippled around them, losing stability. Something was wrong with the ship. The navigator spun in his tank of melange. His webbed feet and hands flailed, and he sensed darkness ahead. The massive ship veered off course and hurled back into the real universe. While Romber was thrown to the carpeted deck of the frigate in a tumble of purple and copper cloth, Leto grabbed a bulkhead rail to keep his balance. He uttered a silent prayer. He and his valiant crew could only ride this out and hope the Highliner didn't emerge inside a sun. Like a tree beside Leto, Thufir Hawat somehow maintained his balance by sheer force of will. The Mentat teacher stood in a trance, sorting through veiled regions of logic and analysis. Leto wasn't certain how such projections could benefit them now. Perhaps the question, the odds of disaster following shield activation inside a Highliner, was so complex that it required layers and layers of mentation. "Prime projection," Hawat announced at long last. He licked his cranberry-colored lips with a tongue of matching hue. "Thrown out of fold space at random, odds of encountering a celestial body are calculated at one in..." The frigate jerked, and something thudded below decks. Hawat's words were drowned out in the commotion, and he slipped back into the secret realm of his Mentat trance. Romber stumbled to his feet, tugging an ear-clamp headset in place over his tousled blonde hair. "Activate shields on a moving Highliner? That's as crazy as, someone firing on the Tleilaxu in the first place." With wide eyes, he looked at his friend. "This must be a day for crazy events." Leto leaned over a bank of instruments, made a number of adjustments. "I had no choice," he said. "I see it now. Someone is trying to make it look like we attacked the Tleilaxu. An incident that could spark a major war among the factions of the Landsraad. I can envision all the old feuds coming into play, and battle lines being drawn here on the Highliner." He wiped his brow, smearing sweat away. The intuition had come from his gut level, like something a Mentat might have realized. "I had to stop everything now, Romber, before it escalated." The Highliner's erratic motion finally ceased. The background noise quieted. Hawat finally snapped out of his trance. "You are right, my Duke. Almost every house has a representative ship aboard this Highliner, en route to the Emperor's coronation and wedding. The battle lines drawn here would extend out into the Imperium, with war councils called and planets and armies aligning themselves on one side or another. Inevitably, more factions would arise too, like the branches of a jacaranda tree. Since the death of Elrood, alliances are already shifting as houses look for new opportunities." Leto's face flushed hot, his heart jackhammered. "There are powder kegs all over the Imperium, and one of them is right here within this cargo hold. I'd rather see everyone on this Highliner die, because it would be nothing compared to the alternative. Conflagrations in every corner of the universe. Billions of deaths." "We've been set up?" Romber asked. "If war breaks out here, no one will care whether or not I really fired. We've got to stop this cold, and then take the time to sort out the real answers." Leto opened a comlink and spoke into it, his voice brisk and commanding. "This is Duke Leto Atreides calling Guild Navigator. Respond, please." The line crackled, and an undulating voice came back, ponderous and distorted, as if the Navigator could not recall how to converse with mere humans. "All of us could have been killed, Atreides." The way he pronounced the house name, Atreides, brought to Leto's mind the word traitor. "We are in unknown sector. Fold space gone. Shields negate navigation trance. Shut down Atreides' shields immediately." "Respectfully, I must refuse," Leto said. Across the comm system, he could hear other messages being shouted to the navigation chamber. Accusations and demands from the ships aboard. Muffled, angry tones. The navigator spoke again.
Atreides must shut off shields. Obey guild laws and regulations.
Refused. Leto stood firm, but his skin had gone pale and cold, and he knew his expression just barely concealed his terror.
I don't think you can get us out of here as long as my shields are on, so we stay here, wherever we are, until you accede to my request.
After destroying a Bene Tlaloc ship and activating your shields, you are in no position to make any requests,
cried an accented voice, a Tlaloxu.
Impertinent Atreides.
It was the mutated navigator's rumbling, underwater-sounding voice. More muffled communications ensued, which the navigator abruptly silenced.
State, request, Atreides.
Pausing, Leto met the inquiring but respectful gazes of his friends, then spoke into the comm system.
First, we assure you we did not fire upon the Tlaloxu, and we intend to prove it. If we lower our shields, the guild must guarantee the safety of my ship and crew, and transfer jurisdiction of this matter to the Landsrad.
The Landsrad? This ship is under Spacing Guild jurisdiction.
You are bound by honor, Leto said, as are the members of the Landsrad, as am I. There is in the Landsrad a legal procedure known as trial by forfeiture.
My lord, Awat protested. You can't mean to sacrifice House Atreides all the centuries of noble tradition?
Leto shut off the voice pickup. Placing a hand on the warrior Mentat's shoulder, he said,
If billions have to die for us to keep our fief, then Caladan isn't worth the price.
Thufir lowered his gaze in acquiescence.
Besides, we know we did not do this. A Mentat of your stature shouldn't have much difficulty proving that.
Reactivating the comlink, Leto said, I will submit myself to trial by forfeiture, but all hostilities must cease immediately. There must be no retaliation, or I will refuse to deactivate my shield, and this Highliner will remain here, nowhere.
Leto thought of bluffing, threatening to fire laser guns at his own shields to cause the dreadful atomic interaction that would leave the gigantic Highliner nothing but bits of molten flotsam. Instead, he tried to be reasonable.
What is the point in further argument? I have surrendered, and will submit myself to the Landsrad on Kaitain for a trial by forfeiture.
I am merely trying to prevent a full-scale war over a mistaken assumption. We did not commit this crime. We are prepared to face the accusations and the consequences if we are found guilty.
The line went dead, then crackled back on.
Spacing Guild agrees to conditions. I guarantee safety of ship and crew.
Know this, then, Leto said. Under the rules of trial by forfeiture, I, Duke Leto Atreides, intend to give up all legal rights to my fief and will place myself at the mercy of the tribunal. No other member of my house may be subjected to arrest or to any legal proceeding. Do you acknowledge the jurisdiction of the Landsrad in this matter? I do. The navigator assured him, in a firmer tone, more accustomed to speaking now.
Finally, still nervous, Leto switched off the frigate's shields and sagged into his chair, trembling.